WMAL-FM Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Northern Virginia will soon be getting more COVID vaccines. The state's vaccine coordinator, Dr. Danny Avula, says they want all parts of the state to move into phase 2 of eligibility at the same time. They're finding demand is much greater in some areas than others.
When you look at communities like Northern Virginia, the greater Richmond area, not only do they have more people, but they also have a demographic that is more interested in getting vaccinated. So we are shifting allocation to those communities.
He estimates overall Northern Virginia will get a 20 to 30% increase. Florida's governor may be cruising to court in an effort to reopen an industry that's been shut down in the pandemic.
Governor Ron DeSantis making some waves over the government's continued ban on cruise ships using U.S. ports. He has threatened to file a lawsuit if one of the state's biggest tourism sectors is not allowed to resume operations soon. The CDC shut down the cruise industry a year ago when several coronavirus outbreaks were tied to ships worldwide. DeSantis and cruise lines say that with widespread testing and vaccines becoming more available, the danger is now no worse than air and train travel, which are open. Some cruises have resumed with restrictions in much of the world, and companies say there have been no new outbreaks. John Saucier, Fox News.
The Virginia Beach oceanfront shaken by gunfire late last night. Virginia Beach Police Chief Paul Newdegate.
An individual was shot by an officer. That subject is deceased. Not counting that individual, we believe we have a total at this time, preliminarily, of 9 additional shooting victims, one of which is also deceased.
Officers on patrol heard gunfire, then discovered the victims. Some of the injured were said to have life-threatening injuries. Newdegate says one officer was hospitalized for minor injuries after being hit by a car during the investigation. We're learning how many migrants are trying to illegally cross the border.
Border Patrol officials released staggering new numbers for migrants attempting to cross the southwestern border. In February 2021, CBP encountered 100,441 persons attempting entry along the southwest border. That number is almost triple the number from 1 year ago, and it is expected to climb even higher in the spring and summer months. Under the Biden administration, unaccompanied minors cannot be deported. On a busy night, as many as 700 arrive, too many to transfer immediately to an HHS facility.
Fox's Steve Harrigan. WMAL Sports, the big dance gets back underway in Indianapolis as the Sweet 16 tips off today.
As Loyola Chicago continues their push to get back to the Final Four after their 2018 miracle run, Team Chaplin's Sister Jean is offering some advice on strategy as her Ramblers open up Sweet 16 action today against 12-seed Oregon State.
Back up of points right from the beginning and try to make some fast breaks so that we're not lagging behind.
The winner of that game will take on the winner of tonight's matchup between 2-seed Houston and 11-seed Syracuse. Today you also have Baylor going up against Villanova for the right to advance, and of course the ultimate underdog, 15-seed Oral Roberts, looking to become the first 15 to ever make the Elite Eight. They're taking on Arkansas. Matt Napolitano, Fox News.
The Caps beat the Devils, and spring training baseball, the Nats beat the Mets. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic, here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In D.C. right now on 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges. As I'm looking into traffic cameras, there isn't any construction set up, and there isn't any accidents, so you will be at the posted speed limit. Now into Maryland on the Beltway, from Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, clear sailing, inner loop and outer loop. Traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, I have nothing to report northbound or southbound. And in Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, eastbound lanes are clear and the westbound lanes are clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds, the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Leggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It's hour two of the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi, White House correspondent at Newsmax and Newsmax TV. He's also the chief political correspondent. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick, and what a beautiful morning it is.
Finally, it looks like we've got spring in the air, the first full weekend of spring. So it's the first full press conference for Joe Biden on his 64th day in office. There have been some criticisms of President Biden in the way he handled the press conference. He had a list with the pictures of the reporters, and the reporters to call on were circled, and they actually had the order in which to call them. He used cheat sheets, and a lot of people have been poking at him about that. Your perspective from having covered many, many presidential news conferences.
Well, here's what's interesting. This is the latest any president has gone in his first year in office in holding a televised press conference. So there is tremendous buildup, like the premiere of a Broadway show almost. And quite honestly, for reporters, it was a letdown. As you say, he did have the cheat sheet, for lack of a better word. President Obama and others have had a list of who they're going to call on. But in this case, it looked as though he was rather obvious. Perhaps most devastating to President Biden was that in his comments about the crisis at the border, that this happens all the time, he's created a new issue for Republicans, for the senators who were at the border denouncing his words and saying he owes an apology. And we are clearly going to see an issue that he did not want to deal with exacerbated. In addition, he commented about Georgia and their toughening up voting laws, comparing it to Jim Crow legislation. I might add one other thing. John Kennedy had his first live televised news conference, in fact, the first ever, January 25th, 1961, 5 days after taking the oath of office. It got rave reviews because JFK answered 37 questions in 43 minutes. I'm not going to go into the number, but Joe Biden didn't even come close to that.
How about his demeanor, his credibility, just sort of an overall summary of how you think he did? I mean, his administration has not been the most transparent.
No, it hasn't. And again, so many things that are done early, be they news conferences, exclusive interviews, or an address to Congress, he has abjured on them. As a result, as it was in the campaign when he campaigned from his basement, we see little of President Biden where he actually has give and take with reporters. I might add one other thing. He uses Marine One as much as Donald Trump did in probably 8 out of 10 occasions, almost all of which I was at. President Trump would take questions from reporters and idly pick on anyone out there, including this reporter. Joe Biden doesn't do that.
And Trump would spend a half hour, 45 minutes out there sometimes.
He certainly would. And I knew some days where he liked to keep us waiting and then would walk the other way. And I can remember on some cold mornings when that was done. On the other hand, he not only took time and answered questions on most occasions, he would use the takeoff of the helicopter to make an announcement, notably the resignation of Secretary of Labor Alex Acosta.
Let's turn to the filibuster. What's the latest on the Democrats' efforts on the filibuster?
You know, I had a colleague of mine way back in the day who, when I pointed out what appeared to be hypocritical stands by politicians, he'd shake his head and say, "It depends on whose ox is being gored." And that's the case now. Democrats enjoyed using the filibuster to block Republican appointees to the high court and to the lower courts. And then it was Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell in 2017 that ended the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees, allowing votes on Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and then Amy Coney Barrett. Interestingly, he was only following precedent, because when the Democrats had the majority, then Majority Leader Harry Reid ended the filibuster federal judges, excluding the Supreme Court, and this allowed Barack Obama to finally get nominees on the second highest court in the land, the Court of Appeals. Now, Democrats, by and large, want to end the filibuster, or as President Biden suggested, simply end the silent filibuster and require senators to talk 20, 24 hours, as Jimmy Stewart did in the movie Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, as Strom Thurmond did for a record 24 hours in 1957. We'll see what happens on that. One last thing. I mentioned President Obama. In 2005, one of the most powerful speeches in defense of the filibuster was delivered by Senator Barack Obama of Illinois. Now he calls it Jim Crow legislation.
Elections in Israel. Number one, what's the status? Number two, how does it impact us?
That's always the most important question. What does it mean to us? Because when you get down in the weeds in Israeli politics, you can lose a lot of listeners. I'll try to keep it short and simple. Bibi Netanyahu is not going to be able to form a government. Israel's longest-serving prime minister, perhaps the best-known Israeli in the world, only has, at his very best, 59 supporters in the 120-member parliament, or Knesset. This means all the attention will be on someone most Americans don't know, Yair Lapid. He's one of us, Rick. He was a TV newscaster and an author before he went into politics. His Yash Atid, or moderate party, came in second with 18 seats. And if you add up from liberal-leaning parties like the old Labor Party that governed Israel so long to parties that include Palestinians, he comes up with 61 votes. Just yesterday, he was photographed having a very friendly breakfast with one of the right-wing leaders, former Foreign Minister Avigdor Lieberman. Why do these people like Lapid? Because he's not Bibi Netanyahu, who's been around a long time. As to what it means in the United States, Mr. Lapid guessed correctly. The Democrats were going to come in and Joe Biden would be president. He's cultivated, through his contacts in the United States, Democratic politicians, including the current president. It's one of the worst-kept secrets in the White House that despite a very cordial relationship between Biden and Bibi, the current president would like to sit down with Mr. Lapid as the prime minister. In the end, it's not going to mean much. Probably in 4 to 6 weeks, and you heard it here first on WMAL, you will see Israel holding its fifth election in 2 years.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Thank you for the prediction. Appreciate it.
Right. And I would just say to everyone, follow my example, and if you get an opportunity to get the vaccination, do it. Last Thursday, I had it, and I felt fine, albeit a little tired after. Do it. You're doing your duty as a citizen.
Thank you, John. Good words there. 7:16, it is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkison is next, then it's Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland also on the way between now and 8 o'clock. Right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Largo, on the inner loop of the Beltway, there has been an accident reported at Ritchie Marlboro Road, exit 13. No reports of any slowdowns. In Bowie, on 450, both directions are blocked right now at Scarlet Oak Terrace because of a sinkhole in the middle of the road. On 50 in Prince George's County, you shouldn't find any delays between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, east and west. And on the Montgomery County side of the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop are traveling at the posted speed limit. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC7 meteorologist Alex Leggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Still 48 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:17 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. We're glad that you've joined us, and Cheryl Atkison joins us each week. Of course, she is the author of Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism, and she hosts Full Measure every Sunday morning on ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
We've seen all the imagery from the southern border, the illegal immigration now, the cases of COVID-19 that are being reported. But an angle that you've got tomorrow in Full Measure is how COVID-19 has impacted drug trafficking. And I think that's a fascinating story.
You know, normally before there was COVID, the cartels, which have, you know, CPAs and attorneys and planners and have all this stuff figured out, they were operating one way, and all of a sudden when a lot of traffic was stopped between the border, now commercial traffic continued, but a lot of non-essential travel between Mexico and the U.S. stopped, and they couldn't use the same people and the same methods that they had been counting on, meaning the drug cartels. This is according to Border Patrol, who I interviewed at the Nogales, Arizona port of entry. So they saw different trends, and one of them was a lot more individuals carrying drugs on or inside their bodies. And we're not talking about a few pills. I mean, I don't know how they can, you know, not to be graphic, but fit all of these things where they fit them. But there's just a lot more of that because they've had to recruit people that they didn't used to have to use that can cross the border back and forth. Not everybody can.
You're not a politician, and you've spent a lot of time at the southern border. What's your sense of reality at the border now? I mean, we have the Secretary of Homeland Security saying that the border is closed, that there's no problem. We had a troop of Republican senators at the border yesterday afternoon with the complete opposite picture. What's your sense of reality?
Well, I think you can listen to the Democrat Henry Cuellar, whose district is impacted in Texas. He's, I think, quite an honest broker in all of this. And his brother is a sheriff down there, the Laredo mayor, all in a very Hispanic town and a Hispanic person. They all agree on these issues, as do a lot of border towns, whether they're Democrat or Republican, and as do a lot of law enforcement officials. It's a huge crisis. There is an ebb and flow, but this one can be directly traced to the change in policies and the anticipation of Biden coming into office. There's no doubt about that in the minds of anybody that I spoke to. So it's bad. It's getting to be maybe, as you've heard, worse in terms of numbers than it's been in the past 20 years, although we did have a spike in the 2019 time period before President Trump instituted some special measures. We had a spike in minors, of course, in the 2015 time period. The cartels control all of the traffic. I think this is something that I learned that most people probably don't know. These are not just migrants who are organically coming across the border. They're recruited, and these people must pay in one form or another, whether they have to carry drugs, whether they have to, you know, have sex or let their children be trafficked, whatever it is, or pay cash. Nobody virtually comes across the border, according to officials, without the approval of the cartels, who get a fee and decide who crosses where, what time they cross, and how they cross. And they're moving a lot of immigrants in some areas to distract from where they've been moved drugs in other areas, knowing that Border Patrol agents are tied up doing social work. So this is all very planned, and it was very predicted and predictable, as Congressman Cuellar says, and I agree with that.
The Biden administration has been blaming the recent surge on the problems in the border on former President Trump. Well, former President Trump made two media appearances this week, phoners into different Fox News shows. And in speaking with Fox on Thursday night, the president talked about his new means of communication, which is press releases from the office of Donald J. Trump. Now, since he's been knocked off of social media, this is how he is communicating. He expressed his pleasure with the way it's going. And you actually are posting those releases at CherylAtkison.com, and you've got his most recent one up there on the homepage.
Yeah, he just had a simple statement saying, "Where is Durham?" And that was just about it, whatever happened to him. But I'll tell you, it's been hard, for me at least, to find out what Donald Trump is up to. And I can't guarantee I have all of his statements because it was difficult for me to even figure out how to get on a mailing list for them. I couldn't find them online anywhere. And one thing that bugged me is when some reporters who were getting some information, they would report in the national media maybe that he said something, but not link to more information or not link to if Trump made an appearance where you could see it. They're clearly wanting to do some reporting on him, but not act in a way that accesses the public to him. So now that I'm getting some of his news releases, I'm trying to post them so that, because I just think it's wrong to try to, stop the free flow of information to the public. So I'm doing what I can to put stuff out there that's hard to find.
You know, it is pretty amazing when you step back and you see that social media has muzzled the 45th president of the United States.
It's almost unbelievable. And you think about social media when it started, the promise of that and the internet was quite the opposite. The free flow of unfettered information and ideas, except, of course, that which is illegal. But now, as we see, it's become an entirely different animal.
Last summer, the rally in Sturgis, South Dakota, the annual event that attracts bikers and Harley enthusiasts from all over the country, the media reports were of it being a super spreader event, and all the images of what appeared to be the media's attempt to cast them all as Trump supporters. You have a story on Sturgis and the follow-up after the Sturgis event. What did you find?
You know, it's one of my favorite things to do is to ask a question that I don't think has been widely answered. At least I hadn't seen whatever happened after all these claims that it was a super spreader event. So not knowing what the answer would be, was going to report on it either way. I went to Sturgis and learned that it was a huge myth, that there was virtually no disease traced to Sturgis, and even the cases that were, as you may know, scientifically it's impossible to prove. It's sort of more conjecture. But on average, according to how it turned out, the people at Sturgis were far, far less likely to have gotten a case of coronavirus than the average person in America, if the scientific estimates on all of that are true. So none of those wild, outlandish predictions. I think one study claimed that 250,000, a quarter of a million COVID cases were linked to the Sturgis rally. And in the end, maybe there were, again, below average infection rate, 260 that could possibly have been linked, not a quarter of a million. So it's very interesting to go and get the stats and look at the studies and kind of follow up on that.
Well, you know, I mentioned Slanted, and that's just one of the books that you've written about the media and how the media operates these days in covering stories. And I would imagine that the, you know, that 250,000 estimate is just another example of how there's such little credibility anymore in the media when they attribute things to anonymous sources, and now we're down to one source and it becomes a national news story.
Yeah, and I think the hardest part of that is when it turns out not to be true and data comes in that I didn't see anybody went back of these national publications and corrected the record. And in fact, when I went to Sturgis, the city official I interviewed there pointed out that a lot of national publications actually used images from the big event they had 5 years ago, which he said was a very different event, and misrepresented it as 2020. And I found examples of that, and that I'll have those on the program Sunday as well. But he was very discouraged because he said, we had live cameras up and gave the media permission to capture any images. And here we saw all across the nation them using file tape images of our biggest annual rally, some anniversary, big number in 2015 versus what people were really doing in 2020.
Cheryl Atkinson, Full Measure, tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
7:26, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up right after the 7:30 news. We'll talk to him about Democratic initiatives on gun control that they're talking about. Also, North Korea firing missiles this past week. What does that mean? It's all coming up. Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In Centerville, there is a disabled vehicle with the right lane blocked on 66 eastbound, just west of the Fairfax County Parkway. In Largo, there is an accident on the inner loop of the Beltway at Ritchie Marlboro Road, but I have no reports of any slowdown, so use caution if you're approaching that area. And in Bowie on 450, in both directions, the road is closed at Scarlet Oak Terrace because of a sinkhole in the road. And in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, you should find all lanes open. There isn't any construction or any accidents reported. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
High pressure is in control on this Saturday. Should make for some delightful weekend conditions for the start of it, at least. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s. Mostly sunny skies. Could see some afternoon clouds streaming in ahead of the next system, but still dry conditions as we head towards the afternoon and evening. Later on tonight, mostly cloudy. After midnight, could see the chance for some showers developing, even some rumbles of thunder by early Sunday morning. StormWatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Chance for some strong afternoon and evening storms. Highs in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett from StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
48 degrees in the nation's capital, 735 on WMAL. 7:36 Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for joining us, and we thank Tony Schaefer for joining us every week. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, always great to join you, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Mixed messages out of the White House this week on a number of fronts, including gun control. And yeah. I wanted to ask you about this because there's an article in the New York Times. Let me read a couple of graphs real quick. Supporters of gun control lashed out at President Biden on Friday for suggesting a day earlier that gun legislation would not be his next priority, even after two mass shootings this week. Mr. Biden initially said on Tuesday that he did not need to wait another minute to address the epidemic of gun violence, calling on the Senate to pass a ban on assault weapons and to close background check loopholes. But on Thursday, Mr. Biden left gun control proponents dumbstruck and disappointed when he said the key to legislative success was ordering priorities and that infrastructure, not guns, was next on his list. In the mixed messaging, though, during the week, he had talked of possible executive orders when it came to gun control. And I guess a couple of questions arise. How far could he go with executive orders? And what areas should citizens, gun owners, be concerned about in the Democratic push on gun control?
Well, you have to look at the authorities he has that he can execute from the Oval Office legally, and that is suspending or stopping the imports of weapons, components, and that sort of thing. This is something presidents have done routinely. But nothing really more than that at this point could he do directly regarding gun control. And let's break this down a little bit, just the way this has been phrased by the media. Notably, this is in contrast, as you know, Rick, to this voting rights thing. And let me ask you a question. Let's ask the audience a question. Because you are required to use an ID to buy a gun, is that Second Amendment oppression? Is that Second Amendment essentially, you know, because right now the whole voting rights thing is that, hey, we want you to vote without an ID. So, gee, is that suppressing your Second Amendment right? Just think about that for a second regarding the contrast of what else this administration is doing. Second factor is the whole idea of the banning of quote-unquote assault weapons. And I've said this before on this program, and I'll say it again. Assault weapons don't exist. There's no such category as weapon. The terms assault weapon came from Sturmgewehr, the STG-44, which is a Nazi weapon, and the term is a Nazi term. Hitler himself came up with it. So it's fascinating you see the left using literally Nazi terminology to push this whole fantasy of an assault weapon. And if you actually examine what happened in these past shootings, Rick, the law was followed. The law simply does not work to keep weapons from criminals who will not follow the law. So I think Biden understands the last factor especially, because everything they want pretty much in legislation was in place in Colorado and it failed. And I think others in the Senate have also recognized that. So at this point, you know, it's. I don't think it's going to be successful. He can do some things which are very provocative regarding executive orders, maybe even order Hunter Biden to turn that gun back in that he apparently acquired illegally, since he apparently lied on his ATF form talking about illegal gun use. It's been pretty much confirmed now that Hunter did obtain a weapon. So it's a very interesting situation, both for him personally as well as professionally regarding what happens. But I just don't think he's going to be able to do much on the gun control issue.
One of the conversations that arises around gun control is the mental stability of these shooters and identifying these people who are having mental issues, and they give out warning signs and they make threats, but either they're not reported or people don't take them seriously. Any progress on that front that could possibly be bipartisan?
Look, this is something that my late friend Jerry Doyle, radio talk host and my friend, actor, we talked about this a decade ago, trying to get people to recognize that mental health and those issues related to drug use, you know, illegal drug use in some cases, are the things that people should be focused on. And it's something that a lot of other folks recognize too, but there's really no effort because the left simply always wants to go after the guns. They don't want to go after the fact that guns don't by themselves pick up and shoot people. It's people who are normally somehow altered mentally, which happens. This is regarding Colorado, too. The individual there was both on the FBI's radar and had been observed by his family as being unstable, yet somehow the red flag laws had no effect. So people need to take a step back, recognize that firearms are simply a technology, like a car is a technology, and that in the hands of a crazy person, a car or a gun can be used to do very devastatingly bad things.
I turn to North Korea. Kim Jong-un is back to firing missiles, not missile tests, but more of a test of the new Biden administration. There are reports that there is a new tactical guided missile that North Korea has. Wanted to get your take on, number one, is there such a thing? And number two, just the timing of the missile launches.
Well, the North Koreans say there is such a thing, and they did fire something, and all accounts, you know, that one report that they put out said it was 270 miles. Another says the range 303 miles. Some experts believe this is a response by the North saying it's 2.5 tons warhead to a – because the South Koreans did a 2.0 warhead test last year. So there's a lot of kind of posturing going on. But, yes, no doubt the reason this was done is to remind the Biden administration that North Korea is there. And I think it's notable and dangerous by the fact that, you know, speaking of mental health, you know, Un is not the most stable individual. I think there's issues there regarding how the Biden administration is going to come in and do this. The other thing that the media is downplaying, Rick, which I think is obvious if you look at it, is that there's several crises brewing all at once. You have the Southwest border. You have now China doing provocative things with Taiwan. And now you have North Korea. So what I see here developing is a massive across-the-board challenge of Joe Biden as a leader. And Tony Blinken is the Secretary of State and Lloyd Austin is the Secretary of Defense. So North Korea is simply, I think, ramping up in conjunction with others who are going to do provocative things to see what they can get away with.
Kim Jong-un's sister put a statement out, and are you getting any sense from your sources or from what you can tell as to what's going on over there as to what role she is playing in really the North Korean quote-unquote administration?
So many things are done via family within a number of these dictatorships, and I think she is probably Un's greatest ally and most effective lieutenant. So her role as being kind of the main method vector of his actions is pretty apparent. So I think you'll see a lot more of her in days to come.
That's also a good way to stay alive there, because I understand that family members are not spared if they get on the wrong side of Kim Jong-un. You have the Thought to Action podcast at the London Center website, and tell us what's latest on the agenda there.
So Gavin Wax, one of our fellows who was on recently on with Tim Pool even, he and I are on this week talking about the progressive left's war on objective truth. So that's our latest Thought to Action podcast. I hope everybody checks it out. Gavin being one of our fellows from New York. He's a hip guy, a young guy. So we talk about kind of the contrast of everything that's going on in media and with the politics today. So people, I hope, will come in and check it out.
You'll find that at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you as always.
All right, thank you, Rick.
We're at 7:45. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland next up. But first, let's head over to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
On 270 northbound, there is police activity. Left lane is blocked in Frederick. This is right near Maryland 85, exit 31. In Centerville, there is a disabled vehicle. Right lane is blocked on 66 eastbound. This is just west of the Fairfax County Parkway, exit 55. And in Bowie, on 450, both directions are closed at Scarlet Oak Terrace because of a sinkhole in the roadway. And I have no reports of any slowdowns around the Beltway, whether it's in Virginia or in Maryland. Inner loop and outer loop are at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
What a spectacular start to your weekend. Highs today should reach the low to mid-70s under mostly sunny skies. We will see some added clouds streaming in during the afternoon, but dry conditions expected for the start of your weekend. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Could see some showers or storms developing well after midnight and into Sunday morning. Stormwatch 7 is on weather alert on Sunday. Could have some strong afternoon and evening showers and thunderstorms. Damaging winds, the primary threat. High temperatures in the lower 70s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
48 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:46 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. The Saturday morning update continues. It's 7:50 on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland. She is President Trump's first deputy national security advisor. She is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning. It is wonderful to have you with us.
Well, it's always an honor and a pleasure, Rick. Thank you.
Well, the honor is ours to have you with us. I really appreciate you being with us every week. And I want to follow up on something we talked about last week. And we were talking about U.S. relations with China, the contentious meeting that Tony Blinken and our delegation had with the Chinese delegation last week. And you had referred to it as a Cold War. And you have an opinion piece at Fox, the headline, U.S.-China Cold War, it's real. The Chinese believe they are already or soon will be the strongest nation in the world. And that's so striking that you put it that way. And we saw what happened in that meeting. And now the Biden administration is planning on a virtual environmental meeting that will include the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, the Russian president, Vladimir Putin. So you've got Tony Blinken dealing with him on one side, and then you're going to have John Kerry dealing with him on the climate front. And we saw how John Kerry handled the Iranians in the nuclear negotiations. So we got a mess here, it looks like.
Yeah, and the Chinese will play them off. I mean, the Kerry is so consumed with being the climate czar, and Blinken is protecting, in his mind, protecting American interests with China. But is there stuff that they're going to trade off? I mean, is Kerry going to be willing to say, okay, we have some sanctions left on China left over from the Trump era. We'll trade those for Chinese, quote, concessions on climate. Now, the Chinese concessions are likely to be as follows. That they will promise to be carbon neutral, net neutral by 2060. Okay, well, who knows?
I was going to say, yeah. World, you know? Let's get that in writing, KT.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not even that they pledge to be; it's that they pledge to hope to be. You know, they're going to try, and it's like the Paris Climate Accords. They're going to try to limit their greenhouse gases and gas emissions. By whatever, I forget, 2030 something or other. Try, not pledge, not promise. They're going to try. And, you know, is that worth trading anything off for? I don't think so. I mean, you know, you trade concrete stuff for concrete stuff. So there'll be that problem. But I guess I'm also just, I just kept thinking that, okay, every new president gets tested. I understand that. This administration more than ever and others because, you know, especially after that press conference, I mean, Biden's perceived frailty and weakness and America's dysfunctional democracy. and the woke media and the cancel culture. I mean, they all hammer away at how incompetent we are and how terrible America is. Well, of course it makes our adversaries even bolder. You know, in international relations, weakness is perceived like blood in the water for sharks. I mean, the people, the country, our adversaries will go after that blood every time, and they'll be in a frenzy to take their bite. So I'm assuming that, you know, there will be bigger challenges ahead.
Well, it is amazing the messaging that must go around the world and how it is perceived, the way the American media and social media, I mean, the climate here, the way that is portrayed and perceived around the world, that's scary.
Yeah, I mean, the alliance between the Democrats, the media, and big tech, it's getting dangerously close to what authoritarian governments do. I've spent a lifetime studying governments of other countries, and as a grad student at Oxford, I focused on communists and revolutions. And the communists had a pattern of takeover. First, they would co-opt the intelligentsia, and then they take over the media. And today's woke cancel culture, it looks like the end days of the French Revolution or the Chinese Cultural Revolution. Chinese Cultural Revolution was the Chinese students took over the colleges, they took over the media, they then they destroyed Chinese culture. The first thing they went after was history, and they destroyed Chinese culture. Well, what's the woke media doing, woke cancel culture media mob doing now? They're destroying American history, right? They're saying America's an evil nation. And it's there are a lot of very similarities, and none of it ends well. And then another angle on sort of communist takeovers, China. Okay, so after Lenin took control of Russia, he relied on those people in the West who were sympathetic to his cause. He called them, quote, useful idiots. Mm. The people who were convenient to communism's cause, who were sympathetic or who believed the propaganda, and then railed against their own governments. Lenin encouraged them, and then Stalin later even seated his own agents within these movements. And these useful idiots were helpful in bringing down their own governments, but would be gotten rid of the minute the communists took over. And I kept thinking of that useful idiot line with the U.S.-China meetings in Alaska last week, and you know, maybe even the Kerry, the Climate Czar meetings to come. Chinese leaders came to the United States and Alaska. They accused the U.S. of racism and all these terrible things. Now, that was bad enough, but the lines they used, where they quoted back to us, the woke mob cancel culture lines of how America is conceived in racism, America's terrible, it's murdering its own people, it's an unjust nation, I mean, it's an unworthy nation. And the Chinese quote that stuff back to us, and I kept thinking, oh yeah, woke culture, cancel culture mobs, they're China's useful idiots. They're making American democracy dysfunctional. They're tearing down American history. Of course, the Chinese and our adversaries are going to point to them as the truth in hopes that they will so destroy us from within that that pushing us over the edge, taking over America's role of dominance in the world affairs will be an easy pickings. And then the other thing that got me is, Blinken rather, when China does this diatribe against American evils, what is Blinken's response? He gets back, his counter to that is, well, America's not perfect. You know, we're trying. Are you kidding? I would have walked out of those meetings. Nobody comes to my country and insults America the way the Chinese did and gets away with it. I would have walked out, meeting over. You need us more than we need you. Come back when you're ready to talk to us civilly. So by not doing that, it was, again, another sign of weakness, of, you know, appeasement. And I don't think this bodes well. My guess is, and I wrote in this editorial that you so kindly referred to, and I've been saying frequently in the last couple of weeks, that Joe Biden, he's Jimmy Carter 2.0. Jimmy Carter was elected after Watergate and Nixon, and it was he was hailed at the time by the media as the guy who is going to unify America and heal our wounds and our national nightmare is over, et cetera, et cetera. And yet, within 2 years, the economy was a disaster. We had a very high rampant inflation. We had an economy that was stagnant, that wasn't growing, and very high unemployment. I mean, it was so bad, they even had to create a new word for it. It was called stagflation. And at the same time, America was being pushed around because of that perceived weakness. We were being pushed around by our adversaries. In that case, it was the Soviet Union instead of China, but also Iran, interestingly. So I think Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden, same guy, same thing. And within a couple of years, the economy is going to be a disaster in the United States with high taxes, giving up our energy independence, and at the same time, kowtowing and perceived weakness and compromise with countries which will only exploit that weakness. But at the end of the Carter administration, guess what happened? We got Ronald Reagan, who changed the world. So, you know, maybe Joe Biden's necessary for the Republican leader who will change the world in 2024. Anyway, that's my optimistic vision.
Well, KT, we are very fortunate to have your perspectives and to keep this in check, especially with the way cancel culture and the attack on free speech continues from the woke mob, as they say. So thank you for speaking out this morning. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you so much, KT.
Pleasure and an honor.
Thank you. That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. The news is next, followed by Garden Sense. Thanks for being with us this morning.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.